Welcome to Inside Tech World. My name's Al Martine, and while we had promised that the next time we were going to have a podcast was going to be our Halloween show, which we're actually going to record next week, some other stuff kind of came up that we thought was a really good idea to start talking about. And what we're referring to is a very long, detailed conversation that's been occurring on our email discussion group on the new Society for Technical Communications certification program. And last week, they sent out some announcements and made some additional details available. And all of a sudden, this spurred a lot of conversation. And there were a lot of questions that were coming back and forth. And we had decided, we reached out to Steve Jong, who is the chair of the STC Certification Committee, he's a volunteer, and in real life, he is a team leader at Tekelec, which is a telecom in North Carolina, but he is in the great state of Massachusetts right now. He has agreed to sit down and speak with us about this certification program, answer some of our questions that we saw coming through, and just be able to elaborate a little bit. So I'm going to hand over. The other person on our call today is Connie Giordano, who's the editor for Tech Writer Today magazine, and hand it over to Connie.
Thank you, Al. Well, I am really glad that we have gotten this opportunity to sit down with Steve, who has been one of the fires behind getting certification going, to talk about this issue, because it has been a matter of discussion for a really long time on the Tech World discussion list ever since I've been a member of it back in the 90s. And I imagine that even longer than that within the STC itself. So it's been probably a pretty busy year for Steve going out and talking about how important this is and what the aspects of. So we decided that we would sit down and have a chat about that. And Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Connie, and thank you, Al. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. And by the way, I love what you've done with the place on Tech World.
Well, thank you very much. We've been excited that we're seeing a lot of new faces and a lot of new voices out there, and are glad to be able to have the chance to liven the community a bit more. And now we're going to do a little bit more with the podcast. I guess the first thing that I wanted to really ask about is just to get a little bit of background in terms of, as I mentioned, the certification debate's been going on for a really long time. And I was wondering if you could kind of give us a little bit of background on what the circumstances were that finally brought about this actual real live program.
Sure. Within the technical communication community, certification has been an issue going all the way back to the annual conference in San Diego in 1964. We have records that certification's been talked about at least that long. And it has never gone away. There has been activity at STC on and off since at least 1975, when the first certification committee was set up, or certification task force was set up, taken a number of polls, done a lot of background work. It's never been out of sight. Actually got as far as a business proposal to the board 25 years ago, which the board tabled, decided to put it off for 2 years, and that turned into 25. It's been in the last 5 years that it's become more active and onto the front burner, partly because STC has started to look at what it means to be a professional technical communicator. What is the definition of a professional? And we discovered, and at the time I was on the board of directors of STC, so I'll say we, although the certification commission itself is legally separate from STC, and there's a different group there. But we on the STC board started looking at what made a profession and hired some consultants to look into it. And they came back and said the things that distinguish a profession are a body of knowledge, a code of ethics, and certification. And we set out to do those things. STC now is working on a body of knowledge. We had a code of ethics, and now we have certification. So now we can legitimately take our place as a group of professionals alongside other professions. I think the last 5 years also STC started to see the characteristics of associations that would be successful in the future. As you know, we have on the staff not just people who are technical communicators, but people who know how to run associations. And what their sources told them was that the associations that will be successful in the future, the ones that provide value, are ones that have certification programs. So there was a synergy there.
Okay. Interesting. So you were, you mentioned that you were on the board of directors when this came up, I guess, about 5 years ago. So how specifically did you get involved in establishing the programming and sitting on the commission?
There was a certification task force that had existed, that existed at the time. And when I joined the board, the president at the time, Linda Oestreich, was staffing committees and looking for board members to head committees. And she didn't have anybody for certification. And the subject came up, and I made a, I guess, a fairly strong statement in support of certification. And then another board member stood up and made a fairly strong statement against certification. And Linda looked at the two of us and said, you know, Steve, you sound like somebody would be interested in doing certification. So that's how it happened. I didn't know any better, and I didn't step back fast enough.
Yes, the problem with not being quick enough when volunteers are being scrutinized.
We had theorized that during the first meeting, you had been absent. And, you know, that's how you got voted in. That's how I'd ended up a couple chairs. And I think Connie had what too. Was like, so whoever doesn't show to the first meeting.
No, it was worse than that. I opened my mouth.
Oh, okay.
Yes. The plight of the tech writers who open their mouths. But anyway, well, why don't you give us a little bit, you know, some of the official quote unquote party line, but the formal description of how you all describe the benefits of the certification program for the applicants, the profession as a whole, and employers. And feel free to embellish that with any of your own thoughts around what you personally feel like are the big key parts of this.
Sure. The first thing that people will say to me as I've talked about certification is, you're just trying to make money for SDC, right? As if that's a bad thing in and of itself. I'll leave that aside. But a certification program that is just about making money for the certifying body is going to fail. There have to be other reasons beside that. That is a reason, but there have to be things that provide value to the people who are trying to get certified, to the people who are looking for certified professionals or looking for professionals. There has to be some value to certification. And there has to be some value to the organization that's going to spend the money to put the program into place. The reasons that you would want to have certification are called drivers, and we established a set of drivers several years ago. For an applicant, for a person who would want to get certified, it allows an applicant, allows a professional a chance to stand out, frankly. It allows an opportunity to increase their employability and their salary. There is a very strong correlation between people who get certified, who continue to advance their careers through continuing professional development, and success on the job. Employers notice that. It's employers themselves who say, we like people who stay current in their field and aren't just coming in and punching the clock and doing the job and going home. So there's some value in that. And finally, because this is the last piece to calling ourselves a profession, or of calling ourselves professionals, it provides a measure of respect and legitimacy. And I like that as an individual practitioner. For the employer, the situation that we're in now with technical communication is not a real great one, because most employers have a difficult time picking out who's the person they want. They advertise a job and they get 100 resumes. I'm probably being conservative. And some HR person looks through 100 resumes that they're not fully equipped to distinguish or to discriminate through. Now, what makes one writing candidate a better candidate than another? So they look through 100 very quickly. They don't know what they're looking for. Something like certification can serve as a flag. Oh, here's somebody who knows what they're doing. If they've got two candidates, which one do I interview? This one's certified. That can be a tiebreaker. And I'm not speaking about technical communication specifically. It's about any professional field. HR people tell us certification is a tiebreaker. Certification makes a difference. If you apply for a job on Monster these days, there's a field there. What certifications do you hold? It's important. For employers who are looking to pick between candidates, certification can be a tiebreaker again between two equally qualified candidates. This person is certified, this person is not. It makes a difference to employers there. It also makes a difference in situations where employers don't get the chance to interview. I've spoken with hiring managers. I've been a hiring manager myself, and we all think we do a fine job of interviewing people, and we don't need any kind of background certification. We can find out for ourselves who the good candidates are. While that may be, I'll say I can do that, but what happens when I am trying to engage a third party, an outsourcing firm, a company that has a lot of tech writers on staff? Which firm do I pick? Who has the best staff? I have no idea. I can't interview them. What does make a difference, and these third-party agencies have told us themselves, is how many certified staff members do they have? The ones with more certified staff members tend to do better. That's important. For the profession, this helps to set standards of performance. Right now, there's nobody who says, this is what a good tech writer does, this is what a bad tech writer is like. There's no standards. There's no performance standards. This helps to establish performance standards, and it can help increase performance standards over time. We have a mechanism by which we can change what the profession requires. For instance, DITA, XML, information architecture, things like that are more or less cutting edge. There are a few companies that are using it, a few that are using it a lot. My current employer uses it a lot. Before my company was acquired a couple of years ago, I had no need for it. And then my company was acquired, and suddenly I'm working for another employer who uses these concepts a lot. I have to know them. Things change. The field advances. This is an opportunity to move things along and in some cases set standards and maybe raise the bar over time as things change. So there's a value in it for applicants. There's a value in it for employers. There's a value in it for the profession. And, oh, yes, there is the question of non-dues revenue for the society that has underwritten the creation of this program. And to the extent that that keeps dues from rising, it's a good thing for everybody. I think this is a win-win-win, as it has been in other professions that we have studied.
What, and this is kind of a bit of an aside question, but what other professions did you guys look at when you were trying to develop these criteria?
We looked at other professions that involved communication, American Society for Training and Development, the Project Management Institute. That's a big one that has a very large certification program. Bureau of Bells, the Editors in Life Sciences in Canada. We looked a little at TCOM. We looked at a certification program or a certificate program in the UK. We tried to look at a number of them and focused on ones that were close to our domain to get a sense of what they did, what they were looking for, what they charged, and what worked and what didn't work.
I was curious about that because in my own somewhat checkered career, I got my certification in public relations back in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was a very, very rigorous program, but did not at that point have a lot of cachet among employers. I heard a lot of the same arguments for and against certification in that field as I've heard for TechCom. So I was curious as to what kind of communications fields you guys looked at for this. How did you determine the model that you were going to use for this of doing this packet of sort of project and work-based justifications for how you made decisions that you made and in the groupings that you put them in and that sort of thing?
Part of it was that we engaged a consultant who is an expert at setting up certification programs, and we followed what he suggested, and I've been pleased with the results. Part of it is working towards setting up a program that practitioners in the field would be comfortable with. What I'm thinking of is talking to people, talking to technical communicators, mid-career professionals or above or beyond that, been in the field 10, 20, 30 years, and a very strong response that I got back from them, that we got back from them was, I haven't been to school in years. I'm terrified at the thought that I'm going to have to take a test to keep my job. Don't give us tests. We have portfolios. We are comfortable with the model of showing people what we've done. There is a body of knowledge, but it's not fully fleshed out yet. It's getting there, but it's not there yet. If we had a full body of knowledge, as some other professions have, what you do is you test against the body of knowledge. You give them the body of knowledge. You say, these are the things that you need to know to do the job. We're going to test on these critical areas, these areas of practice, and you can prepare tests right off of that. We don't have that body of knowledge in that state yet. We have a lot of people who are working professionals who have portfolios but are reluctant to do tests. So that steered us in the direction of portfolio-based assessment. One of our guiding principles was that the assessment would have to cover multiple modes. It wouldn't just be one kind of a thing. So that steered us in the direction of something that's more common in the education field, a portfolio assessment plus commentary. So the primary structure is show us a sample of what you've done in a specific area and write an explanation of how this meets the requirement and why you made the decisions that you did in order to get here. So you've got to show that you can do it, and you've got to show that you understand what you're doing. In the education field, this kind of assessment, a portfolio with a commentary on what you have done, is called true assessment. They're really excited about the way that it works, and they feel it is a very honest and accurate assessment of what people in the education field can do. And we thought it would work well for us as well.
Interesting. Very interesting. I noted that one of the questions for those who may listen in on this who may or may not be active on the list, one of the questions that came out of that was how the SDC program compares to the one that's being instituted by TechCom, the German Professional Association. And I was wondering if you had been able to get any information yet on how they've structured their program in comparison.
We have a commissioner at TechCom at their conference, she was there this past week. This is Catherine Burton. She is going to report back. I don't have quite enough information to give you an informed opinion about what TCOM is doing. I do know when we looked at them before, they were offering a certification for technical communicators working in Germany in German.
Okay.
That's fine, and we're not going after that market. What they have started to do is offer a certification for people working in English. I don't know whether they have recalibrated what they're asking, what they're teaching to a market outside of Germany. I also don't know the details of the program. At first blush, it appears to resemble a certificate program that might be offered by a college in the United States, in that you take a small number of classes, 3 or 4, from them, and then you do a test, and then you are certified. The model seems to be something like a technical writing certificate in the U.S., but that's a preliminary suggestion. It's my opinion from looking at it from a distance, and I wouldn't put much weight in it just yet. We will find out more. We will understand better what they're doing.
Okay. I thought it might be a little bit early yet, so we'll wait to hear a bit more on that. I want to get into a little bit of the details, particularly as it pertains to the cost, because that's always a big concern, no matter what field you're in and if you're thinking about getting certified. Is what was the rationale for how you designed the cost structure that's in place with the application fee, assessment fee, maintenance fee, et cetera?
Sure. One thing to say is that the overall cost. We looked at in comparison with other certification programs, and also we looked at the cost of STC's certificate programs. Those are the classes that STC offers. Our current certification price is actually lower than the cost of individual classes that STC offers. And it's certainly in the mid-range of, in fact, even a little below the mid-range of other comparable certification programs. So I'm comfortable with the price, although I know that, you know, it's a lot more than people have been used to paying. This is a new thing. The way we structured it is that we split out the cost of application. There is a fee to apply. We split out the cost of evaluation. Once you send in your packet, there's a fee to have it evaluated. And there is a fee to maintain your certification year after year. And we split it into a yearly fee, which is currently $49 and will be $49 after the first of the year for STC members and somewhat higher for non-members. We split it out for several reasons. Partly it reflects the costs and the timing. You apply, but you don't have to put in your packet immediately. You can take up to a year if you want to turn in the individual pieces of your packet. So there's an upfront cost that the staff has to, that the staff consumes in going through the application and validating it, verifying it. There is a fee for evaluation because there is a cost of evaluation. We are giving it to evaluators, and the evaluators, once we get the program fully rolling, will be compensated. You know, this is important. This does involve people's livelihoods. This is not going to be amateurs looking at packets and saying, yeah, that looks pretty good. No, we don't want this person. You know, this is important. They're going to be trained. They're going to be paid. That's part of the cost structure. And the maintenance, it's very standard to have a fee for maintenance. When you renew your certification, you're going to be saying, in the last 3 years, I have done these professional development activities. I've attended these classes. I've gone to these seminars. I've been active in STC, or I've been active in some other professional association. That's fine too. But this all has to be verified. And if somebody says, I took a class in this at this school, we're going to have to do some validation of that and say, is this the kind of thing that we should accept as continuing education for a technical communicator? Or is it out of the field completely and we shouldn't count it? There's also costs for ongoing marketing, ongoing development and maintenance of the certification program itself. So there are costs. We're trying to spread it out. We're trying to avoid sticker shock. The consultant initially suggested, well, here's your recertification fee. This is standard in the industry. And we looked at it and said, oh, I don't think our members and practitioners are going to go for that at all. Maybe we could spread it out as a yearly fee rather than hitting them all up at once. So we're trying to soften the blow a little bit. Within the structure of this being a mid-price or maybe even a little below mid-price certification. So spreading out the cost is part of it. The time gap is part of it. And I think I've explained what your certification dollar is going to go towards. I should hasten to add that the certification commissioners are not getting a penny of this money. I am doing this out of my interest in certification. I'm not getting paid, and I'm not going to be.
I think that's important for folks to recognize that there's no mercenary rationale for this at all in your case, and you're to be commended for taking so much time to work on something this massive.
Well, thank you. I will also add that there are going the staff is getting paid. They're charging us for their time. You know, when we say process 150 applications, that's not free. Their time is being paid for, and that's part of the reason we have fees. But the commissioners are not being paid.
Okay.
Steve, as you were talking about that, you were talking about the evaluators. Can you talk a little more about the evaluators, who they are, and how do you qualify? What constitutes the graders in this?
Sure. I'm not going to tell you who the evaluators are because this is a double-blind process. Once we get it going, it will be a double-blind process where the evaluators do not know who the candidates are, who the applicants are. They'll just be a candidate ID number, and the candidates won't know who the evaluators are. It'll be somebody on the staff who knows which evaluator did which candidate and who that candidate is. There is a kind of a chicken and egg or a bootstrapping problem today. Ideally, the evaluators should themselves be certified. We don't have any certified evaluators yet. The program's just starting. So who is going to evaluate? What I was saying a year ago, if you've gone to the conference a year ago or a year and a half ago now, I was saying all-star evaluators. And we may still do that. But right now it's the commissioners because we helped develop the scoring criteria. We are the best trained on what we're looking for. So it's going to be us for a while. But as soon as we can get out of that business, we will get out of it. We'll get a new generation of evaluators. They will be trained. They will sign non-disclosure agreements. We've already signed non-disclosure agreements. So you don't have to worry that we're going to blab about your company's secrets. We don't care. And the samples that we're looking at will be small enough so that there needn't be any secrets in them at all, or you could recreate your work. Let's see. I would mention that the scoring criteria, which we developed with the help of our consultant, is utterly unlike the judging criteria that you might be imagining came out of a publications competition. This is completely different. I've been very impressed and pleased with the scoring criteria as they've been developed. They are much more objective. They're much more quantifiable. We have a clear idea of what constitutes competent work, you know, what meets the standard and what exceeds the standard and what's not at the standard. It's clearly defined, and I think we can quickly and accurately assess samples against those scoring criteria. So this is the sort of thing that we will train evaluators on. And we'll also be able to test evaluators. We can evaluate evaluators. The way the program is structured, an applicant will send in submissions in blocks. There are actually 9 submissions within the total packet. And we can set up a double-blind system where an evaluator gets a packet identified only by a number and will render an assessment on that packet. Well, if they don't know what the packet is, it might be a packet from an applicant. It might be a test packet of somebody who we've already looked at, the commission has looked at and said, hey, this is a pretty good answer, pretty good submission. Or it could be a submission that's not so good, that we've already said, you know, this person, if somebody submitted this, it wouldn't be good enough. So we can put in test packets in the stream once the stream gets big enough, and the evaluators aren't going to know whether they're evaluating a live candidate or a test submission. But we'll look at the results that come back, and if there's an evaluator, say, who's constantly passing everybody, even for submissions that we know are not any good, or somebody who's not passing an awful lot of submissions, including test submissions that we know are good, we can make some adjustments there.
Sounds like you're attempting to reduce any of the variance that can come for any of the reviews. So I have a follow-up, and I got a couple questions, and then we'll kind of bounce back and forth. And I had a number of questions about what's happening with promoting us to businesses. But the next question that comes to mind, passing, getting certified, not a lot of questions there, right? I get the big packet. It says congratulations. I'm not sure exactly what it looks like. But what happens, say I submit my packet, I go through the entire process, and at the end, I fail. I know I don't get certified. What can I do as an applicant to challenge that initial decision?
If you pass, you will be told, congratulations, you have passed. You are a certified technical communicator. If you don't pass, you will get, no, we're sorry, but you've not passed. We will give you some minimal feedback. This is the area which you need to work on some more. You'd be welcome to apply again. The fees are non-refundable. You don't get your money back if you don't pass. We're not sure whether you can apply again immediately. I think we will allow an immediate reaction, but you might not want to. That's part of the answer. I think that addresses your question, but I would also want to say, actually, I want to stop because I've forgotten what I was going to say.
if I don't pass, then the process itself is also using it as a teachable moment. Then it sounds like that you're able to, that I'll get some feedback that says this part of your portfolio wasn't strong enough, that you are going to, it sounds like the evaluators will provide some sort of detailed feedback.
We will provide feedback. It will not be detailed feedback, but it will be feedback. The other part of your question is appeal, and the process is being set up. It is already set up so that you have avenues for appeal. One of our guiding principles is that there needs to be some kind of remediation in case somebody does not get certified. And so we will have that process. We will be able to bring in a senior evaluator to take another look if you want. And if you pay a fee, if you say, I don't think this was right, I want you to take another look at it, we will charge you for that, but we will have somebody else who wasn't involved in the original decision take another look at it. And if you feel that there was something unfair about it or incorrect, we didn't follow our process, there will be an appeal mechanism. The appeal board will be the certification commission itself, and we can make a determination as to whether we followed the process correctly and did it the way we said we would do it. The certification consultant that we use, we liked because, we picked because he knows how to set up certification programs that are legally defensible. One of the things the SDC board was concerned about was the potential legal liabilities of getting into a certification program. And so they were attracted to somebody who says, I've set up a number of programs that haven't lost a lawsuit yet. This is not foremost on our mind, but certainly there is the possibility when you're talking about people's income and their livelihoods that somewhere down the road, somebody is going inevitably to say, I'm going to sue you. And we're preparing for it. We're setting up something that is as fair and defensible as possible.
Okay. Thank you for elaborating on that. It's all of a sudden that suddenly it's like, boy, you know, passing works. But what happens, the more challenging is always the when my initial expectations haven't been met. And how do I get better? So thank you for elaborating on that. Let's talk about, just for a little bit, the students, those who are getting certified, is really only half of this equation. The other half are the businesses that are valuing it. What is the STC doing to promote this new certification in industry?
We have talked to industry leaders as we've been working on defining the profession and setting up the certification program to ask what they were looking for. We will market the program. I know when I was on the STC board, people said, you really need to market the profession. Well, part of your certification dollar is going to go towards marketing certification and the profession. That's going to be an important component of it.
What type of marketing is intended or has been happening?
Not too much has been happening. The program hasn't generated enough revenue to get into very much marketing. We have had some proposals out there. We've gotten some responses. And probably after the first of the year, we will start funding marketing efforts. I'm trying to remember what the proposals had in them. And I'm not remembering off the top of my head. There were some very different ideas suggested about how to get the word out. But it is contacting businesses, not just through the STC channels, but through other channels as well. And things like this, speaking on Tech World, going to STC programs, chapter programs, speaking at the summit, that's part of it too. It's going to take some time, but the ball is beginning to move and we are going to keep pushing on that ball and keeping it going, getting it rolling.
So let's say I'm an employer and I'm looking at one candidate who has the new certification and one that doesn't. Everything else is completely equal. What is this certification telling me as an employer if I choose that person that has?
It's telling them that this organization is warranting that the certificant, the person who has the certification, is a competent professional, can do the job. It tells them that we've looked at their that candidate's educational background and work experience, and determine through asking questions and looking at evaluating the answers that they have a broad general knowledge of the profession. If I'm a small employer and I don't know how to interview a technical writer, this may be sufficient. This may be all you need. If this person is certified, they must know what they're doing. And we're setting up a program so we can say, yes, this person knows what they're doing. If it's in a large employer who's looking at a staffing agency that employs a lot of technical communicators, it gives them some assurance that the staff knows what they're doing because so many of them or some number of them are certified. I don't think it is not meant to replace domain knowledge. We're not saying that the certificate is versed in a particular field like medicine or finance, physics, any particular domain. It's their knowledge of technical communication that we are certifying.
No domain knowledge. But what else? So I'm looking at it. What is it not telling me? Obviously not an expert in, say, that particular industry. But what else should I not, as an employer looking at it, infer from that certification?
That's an interesting question. Certainly domain knowledge is an important thing that we are not covering. That's something that an employer is expecting to look for and verify on their own. You know, we are looking for people who have backgrounds in biology. For example, we're a pharmaceutical company. We want people with backgrounds in biology. Well, we can't certify any more than the employer can what the candidate's background is. So we're staying away from that. What else are we not certifying? We are not certifying that the person is a toolsmith. We have stayed away from tools knowledge. The skills, the knowledge, and the abilities of a technical communicator include but are not limited to tools. You could just as easily hire an administrative assistant who has strong tool skills in certain tools. High school students routinely now are taking Microsoft certification courses and getting certificates in Microsoft Office. There's no point in our saying, we certify that this person is an expert with Microsoft Word when that doesn't distinguish our certificate from a high school graduate. No, we're looking at things that are technical communication. So that's the area we're in, and domain and tools are out.
Do you, that seemed to be one of the big points of contention on the list about what people were afraid would be misconstrued value or lack of value is because a lot of folks feel that employers are increasingly looking for people with specific domain knowledge as opposed to generalists who can then be taught that. Have you run into those kinds of issues in your discussions with the industry?
We have talked about it a little, and I did see that thread coming up. One of our guiding principles was that we are offering a certification in uniform areas of practice where technical communicators provide unique value. That's a quote right out of the guiding principle. And implicitly, in areas that employers cannot test for themselves. If I am in aerospace and I want to hire maybe a technical communicator, maybe an engineer, doesn't matter. I want to hire somebody who has an aeronautical engineering degree, I can find that information out myself. And STC is not going to add any value in certifying that the person has that degree. You know, they're going to do it, they're going to check for themselves. Doesn't make any difference what STC says. If that's what you're looking for, then the person with the aeronautical engineering degree is going to have the leg up and ought to. It's in situations where you've got two people with aeronautical engineering degrees, one of whom is certified as a technical communicator and one of whom is not, that it does make a difference. Throughout my career, there has always been this dichotomy or this dual stream of people who come into our profession, people who understand technology and people who can communicate information. The people who can communicate information have to learn the technology well enough to describe it to others. The people who know the technology have to learn how to communicate it to others. And you get both types coming in, but it's been my experience, and I think it's a general experience, that it's easier to teach domain knowledge than it is to teach communication. Companies are prepared to teach their technology to new hires, no matter who the new hire is. They're good at that. You know, they train their customers, they train their new employees. Not very many companies are good at taking new employees and teaching them how to write or teaching them how to communicate information, written or non-written, written or otherwise. So that's where we provide the value. And that's kind of where this is going. That's why we're staying away from domain. It's not something where we provide unique value, and it's not something that we can test and certify on that employers can't. They sure can. They do. We'll just stay away from it.
I take it that by the same token, the education criteria not including math or science degrees for the same reason?
The educational requirements, think of it as two reasons. One is that somebody who has a degree is used to the lifestyle of learning information and then applying it. And that's one of the fundamental skills that a technical communicator needs. You learn a technology and then communicate it to others. So just having a degree has some value. But the specific degrees we're looking at are degrees related to technical communication. The directly related degrees, and I'm looking at the list, technical communication, information design, science journalism, professional communication, instructional technology, instructional systems, and human-computer interactions, which is usability. These things are directly related to the areas of practice that we are certifying on, the things that we think are fundamental to all technical communication. The other degrees are domain specific. I know that there was a question that came up about one of the related fields. They're not directly related to technical communication, but are similar to it, which includes English, adult education, journalism, public relations, organizational communication, and computer science. But not computer science because we're all software oriented when the field, the profession is not. It's computer science with a human-computer interaction emphasis. It's the usability part of computer science that we're interested in, and that's because it pertains to an area of practice. It just happens to be that computer science is a domain, but that's not what we're looking for.
Okay. Curious as to why marketing was not included as a relevant degree, just purely personal curiosity.
Well, I was kind of hoping that physics and astronomy would be because that's my degree, but no, it didn't make the cut either. We have an academic standards subcommittee. These are what they proposed. There's a great deal of expertise and experience with setting up certification programs within that subcommittee, and I'm comfortable with the list that we have. I can't really speak to why this degree and not that degree, except for the generalities of it.
Yeah, interesting, because public relations is listed, but marketing is not, which I just thought was a little odd. But I've got to make judgments about what things are truly relevant, I guess.
It's a flexible list. If somebody has a degree that they think should be on the list, either as a directly relevant degree or a related field, they can contact us. We expect to make adjustments over time. These list of all degrees that you can get is large. We don't know all of them. It changes. You know, we will make adjustments as warranted.
Still on the educational criteria prerequisite, one more question on that. And that's in some of the other certification programs I've seen over the years, graduate and postgraduate education often listed as, if not an automatic certification, then certainly adding quite a bit to your application. And it's not mentioned here at all. Was that done deliberately?
I'm not sure it was done deliberately. I don't think there are a lot of master's and PhD programs in technical communication available. Because there are only a few, I think that may have had something to do with it, but I can't speak to it specifically. And as I had said before, this is a list that is flexible, and we may make adjustments over time. And that's possibly an area that we will make adjustment in. We'll take a look at it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when it's a new program, there's always going to be a fair amount of fine tuning that goes along with it. And these were just These were some of the key things that came out time after time, you know, in the 150 or so posts that we had on this topic on the discussion list. I just thought it would be worth bringing up. You know, I think people will see over time that a lot of this stuff will adjust to changes in what's going on in the education world as much as anything. One other question I have related to when Al was discussing what happens if somebody fails is if you do have an applicant who fails to achieve the certification, you said that you're looking at figuring out what the time frame is for being able to reapply. Will they need to pay the full set of fees again to reapply?
Yes, that's our expectation.
And I know you've touched on different pieces of this as we've been talking here about some of the accreditation certification programs that are out there require written exams, which you mentioned we don't have a robust body of knowledge as yet, and other hiring methodology and practices and sort of thing. One of the programs that I did take a certification in required an oral exam because it was a communications related certification. Felt like it was a very important part of that to be able to speak coherently and articulately about the work that you've done over the years. Did those kinds of additional criteria come into discussion as you were trying to make sure that the program you've established is rigorous enough to really fully do the job that we expect it to do for the profession and for employers?
We did look at other ways of certifying, and our consultant is certainly familiar with all of them. I know that for instructional designers, there's a certification program in which you have to submit a videotape of yourself some material. And obviously the ability to communicate orally is very important for trainers anyway. That's not something that technical communicators in general are real strong at. And, you know, a lot of us run away from the camera, not towards it. But may write very well, may illustrate very well. So we needed something that's appropriate for our practitioners. I go back and forth as to whether this is rigorous enough over the time that we've been developing the list of knowledge, skills, and abilities, the KSAs, that we thought were important for technical communicators through the process of winnowing them down with surveys of thought leaders into the things that we thought were the small group that we're actually going to assess on. And then as we develop the questions to assess these things, sometimes I thought, you know, this is really easy. I know these things. I could do this. And at other times I thought, you know, I'm not sure if I can pass this. Some of these things I'm not fully versed on. So I've gone back and forth personally on this. In the end, what's important is that we are certifying competence. This is not a certification that is the gold standard. That if we're not saying that if you are certified, you are the creme de la creme, you are the best in breed, you know, you are the champion. No, no, no. This is establishing that you are a competent professional. And competence is not at the same level as a PhD. So we do want it to be rigorous. We are looking in the scoring criteria very closely at that just barely passes, just barely doesn't pass line. That's the important point. In a publications competition, I've been involved in those for over 20 years, and I know we spend a lot of time arguing over whether an entry is worthy of an award of merit or an award of excellence or an award of distinction. And people will spend a lot of time arguing between excellence and distinction. This is a different thing, and the argument should be at this person is just competent, we pass them. This person is not quite competent, we don't pass them. That's where the important point is. The idea of an oral exam or face-to-face exam doesn't work for the great majority of the practitioners, but also, as a practical matter, that system doesn't scale very well. We have done a business plan. We know how many technical communicators there are in the world, how many we would like to certify. And even at a modest fraction of all of the practitioners in the world, and we're talking about at least 150,000 just in North America, Germany, and India, if even a small fraction get certified, that's a lot of face-to-face exams. That's a lot of evaluation of packets. It's not going to scale well. We are looking forward to having a body of knowledge set up and being able to draw tests from that. That scales very nicely. That can be done. Generate the question, yes, no answer, or whatever. It can be scored automatically. that will scale well. That's what we're heading towards.
That makes sense.
So, Steve, I know that the announcement for certification, while there had been rumors, really occurred at the summit in May. And promotions, I know I saw the email come through last week, and all of a sudden you guys helped us do a little good business on our email discussion group after that. But what kind of response, and on average, have you gotten to the charter campaign so far?
It has been encouraging, but modest. You know, we haven't been overwhelmed with applicants, but that's really what we expected. Our consultant told us, you know, it's going to take a while for this to get going. The model, the success model that we've looked at is PMI, the PMP certification. That organization started their certification program 25 years ago, about at the time the SDC board at the time decided to table our plan, or the plan that was on the before them at that point, 25 years ago. After 9 years, PMI had 1,000 certified project managers. It took them 9 years to get to 1,000. That's not real fast. Of course, today they have over 400,000 certified PMPs. So the potential is tremendous. There are 10 times as many project managers as there are technical communicators in the world. So at the very beginning, you got to take a zero off that number to have any sense of what it might look like 25 years from now in the technical communication field. But even 40,000 would be a transformation of the profession and of the society. And that's the vision that's keeping me going. If we get anywhere near that, that would be great.
So that's a long-term goal, but what's a successful number for certified professionals in this initial period?
The business plan had talked about, certainly not, you know, not 1,000, you know, 100 would be a nice number. I'm from New England. We have the reputation as being thrifty, and I am thrifty. We've invested a significant amount of money in this effort, and I'm very conscious of it. None of it's gone into my pocket, but I know we have spent money on consulting. We have spent money on research. We have spent money on staff to get these things done, on legal fees. And I think of it in terms of we are down a certain number of applicants. Until we get this number of applicants, we haven't recouped our investment yet. We're not planning on recouping it by this coming May, not in a year, not in several years. But the plan is a five-year plan, and if it's realistic, we will certainly have recouped it by then. And then as the program goes, the certification program will become a revenue generator instead of a revenue sink.
On the same similar area of more long-term kinds of planning, what kind of processes are you guys going to try and put in place to help the certification evolve and development? I'm thinking specifically about things like different levels of certification. I know the Knowledge Management Professional Society has a couple of different levels in their certification program, because if you're certified at, say you got a degree in technical communications and you got certified as soon as were eligible, that's what you represent at 30 is very different than what you represent at 5 and have been in the business for 10 or 15 years. My question is really around, have you guys put some thought into how this kind of evolution is going to start occurring?
Yes, we have. One of the guiding principles, or another of the guiding principles we're working on, is that a base certification certification provides a basis for sub-certifications going forward. And I know that was one of the questions that was asked TechWorld. And that question was in the form of, are you going to certify a DITA writer? Are you going to certify a frame writer? And we're not looking at it at that level of granularity. The level we're looking at is, are we going to have a base certification for a technical communicator and then a sub-certification in illustration, instructional design, editing, management, something like that, at that level of granularity, which is much higher. But yes, we are looking at that. That's going to require a body of knowledge that we can test against. That's going to take some time, but it is in the works. It is under discussion. We see the need for that. The model for this, by the way, is the same as the model for medicine. You get a medical degree, and then you are essentially a general practitioner. And then many doctors go on to study specialties emerge from that process as brain surgeons or obstetricians or something else. But the brain surgeon can still set a broken limb or deliver a baby if necessary, because that physician has that knowledge. They just have additional specialized knowledge. Another aspect of this is that we are asking that certification holders stay current, continue to develop professionally, and that's part of the maintenance of certification. Well, we can't sit still either. Now that we have a list of questions, a list of things we expect applicants to do, that list is going to have to evolve, and we're aware of that. And we will continue to keep it up to date and may change it over time as we see new areas of practice emerge or emphasis in areas of practice change. That's something we expect to do ourselves, and we will do that.
Okay, I've got one final question, and I'm not sure whether Al's got anything else, but you had mentioned in one of your posts on the Tech World discussion list that you are not able to apply for certification, and I understand now that because you were going to be one of the evaluators, you already know the set of questions and what you're looking for and whatnot. When your term expires, are you planning on going for your own certification?
I am going to apply for certification as soon as I am able to, and I will be able to some period of time after I leave the commission once I don't know what the right answers are anymore. But, you know, when that day comes, I'm there. I was hoping to be first in line, and then the consultant said, no, you can't do that. That's not fair. That's not right. And I said, darn, all right, I'll have to wait, but I will be there.
Okay. Well, great. I'm sure you will do excellently when you get to that point.
I think I will, actually.
So you're saying you're going to wait till you no longer know any of the answers to then apply for the certification. I just want to make sure I understand.
Yes. But I know that, you know, I don't have to be frightened that this is going to be something that only a few people are going to pass. No, this is, you know, I'm competent. I'm confident that I will be able to demonstrate my competence.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon.
I appreciate the opportunity. It's been fun.
We've been speaking with Steve Jong, chair of the SDC Certification Commission, who has helped organize the new Certified Professional in the Technical Communication Program. Before we go, a special thank you to our sponsors, Adobe Systems, Madcap Software, Component One, EC Software, and for full disclosure, the Society for Technical Communications is on there as well, and the folks at Vancouver Island University. For everybody at Inside Tech World, thank you, and so long.